Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the top of Daf Kuf Yud Dalet. The opening line or question of the Gemara might seem to be a bit confusing in light of the fact that the topic of the question was already dealt with in the previous Gemara. So in order to explain this, we're going to base ourselves on the comment you find in the commentary of the Shita Mekubetzes. The Gemara says, Ibaya Laho, the question is raised, Mahu Sheyesadru Bebal Chov. And the issue of Yesadru is, of course, we spent a lot of time in our previous year dwelling on this, and we'll just mention very briefly, it's the issue of leaving very basic items, life-sustaining type items, for the borrower when he is in the position to have the debt that he owes collected from him. And when we speak about collected from him, we're talking about collecting items of his in order to pay off his debt. And the issue is leaving certain basic items like a bed, like a pillow, that we mentioned in our previous shiur. So here the question is a psak question. Namely, how do we rule on the topic? And the Gemara goes on, Mi gomar, do we accept a gezera shava, micha, me'erechin olo. The word micha is not the exact word that you will see in the Torah, but it's a general form of the word, of the words in the Torah. In Parshas Erechin, Rashi quotes the psukim of Parshas Erechin and the Parsha dealing with loans. In the case of loans, the pasuk, which you can find in Rashi, three lines from the top, says, V'chi yomuch achicho mati yodcho imoch. So you have the word yomuch, and in Parshas Erechin it says, V'im moch hu me'erkecha. The word moch appears like the word yomuch, and that's what the Gemara means when it says, micha, micha. In the Parsha of Erechin, where a person dedicates his Torah value to the Beis HaMikdash, we know that there is this concept of misadrin, where we leave basic items for a person's, let's say, basic life needs in his possession, even though the temple, the Beis HaMikdash treasurer, comes to collect from he who made the pledge. He nevertheless leaves these items behind. Do we learn from that topic of Erechin to the topic of loans and their payment? Toshma, the Shalach Ravin Bigrisei. Ravin sent in a letter. Dovar ze sha'alti l'chol rabosai. This matter, namely, do we learn the Gzeres Shava, the word comparison from Erechin, where there is Sidur, where there is this arrangement, to the Parsha, to the topic of loans? Velo Omru Li Dovar, and the rabbis unto whom I sent this question did not respond. Bram, however, Kach Hoysa She'ela. There is, however, a question from which we could learn that we're not Misader for a Baal Chov. If we look in the Rashi, the first narrow line, Bram, Bram kach hoisa sheila avol kain nishala sheila achas bebeis hamedrash. Even though I didn't receive an answer whether or not the gzera shava is something that we accept, But another question was raised in the base medrash, umino yesh lomod she'ein masajer. And from that other question, we can learn that we're not misader. And here it is. Ha'omer, hare olai moneh lebene kabayis. A person accepts upon himself to give a mona, a sum of money, to the temple, to the Beis HaMikdash repair fund. Mahu shiyasadru. Do we, in dealing with this one who pledged the mona, do we apply the arrangement of sidur to him? This individual made a pledge, and he really can't, he can barely afford to pay for it. Rashi, hare olai mone lebedek abayis, v'hasokas yad lo ksiv elo berachin. Hasokas yad is a concept of ability to pay, sensitivity to ability to pay, which leads to the sidur arrangement. That concept is written in the Torah by erachin, by a person who dedicates his Torah value to the Beis HaMikdash. But other forms of pledge, other pledges to the Beis HaMikdash are not in that category, are not treated with this Hasogas Yad element. Uma Shiesh Lo Govin Heimenu, and whatever a person has, we will collect. If he makes a pledge, we will collect. Vamoiser Yigvu Lachar Zman Im Yashir. And the balance, if he becomes wealthy later, we will collect the balance. So the question was raised, is there a misadrin for someone who makes a dedication to the temple repair fund? Rabbi Yankov Mishmei de Bar Pada, we go on in the Gemara. Rabbi Yankov, in the name of Bar Pada, of Rabbi Yirmiya Mishmei de Ilfa Amri, Kal v'chomer mi Baal Chov. We can draw a Kal v'chomer through Kal v'chomer logic from the case of Baal Chov, which in effect is really our topic, and the conclusion of the Kal v'chomer will be that we're not misader, as follows. Uma Baal Chov shemachzirin ein misadrin. Mind you, a Baal Chov, where we have what we discussed at length in our previous shiur, the arrangement that a lender who takes collateral from a borrower, he is expected to return on an ongoing basis the collateral for the use of the borrower. If he took, let us say, pajamas as collateral, so when the night comes, he has to return, the lender has to return the pajamas to the borrower. In the morning, lender takes them back. So we have this accommodation of the borrower, and yet ein misadrin. We don't leave anything by him when the time comes. We spoke about in our previous year the 30-day mark comes, where we then sell off everything that he has in order to pay off the debt, leaving nothing behind, nothing in his possession. Hegdishain machzirin, in the case of pledges to the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have any form of accommodating the pledger, and Odin Shane Misadrin, all the more so we're not going to accommodate him in terms of Misadrin. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, now maybe even before we go on, what do we see from Ilfa's presentation? We see that in the course of his answer to the issue of Misadrin for one who pledges the Bedek Avayas, that it's a given in Ilfa's mind that we're not misadrin with regard to a Baal Chov, which was our issue. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, and Rabbi Yochanan also addresses the issue of is there misadrin by Hekdish. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, neder be'erkecha ksiv. The Pasuk says, neder be'erkecha, ma erechen misadrin. Just like in the case of a Torah value pledge, we have misadrin. Af Hekdish misadrin. So to other forms of temple philanthropy, where you are dedicating to the Beis HaMikdash, there is misadrin. So you have a machlokus between Ilfa and Reb Yochanan regarding Misadrin by Hegdish, which was not the topic with which we opened, but from this discussion, we do get a glimpse into the issue of Misadrin by Baal Chov. V'idach, Ilfa, what does he respond to Reb Yochanan's posuk citation? Hahu, he says, that posuk, Neder Berkecha, is teaching me something else. Not that we compare neder, a general pledge, to the rules of Erechin for Misadrin, but for Lanidon Bechvoidai Huda Asa. This is a rather brief expression, but Nidon Bechvoido is the reference to an essential organ of a living creature, let's say in this case of a human being. If a person, let us say, says he wants to give the erech of his heart to the Beis HaMikdash, that's called an aver shanishama tluyabo. It's a vital organ. In saying he wants to give the erech of his heart, he's really saying he wants to give his erech, his total erech. And we know from the psukim in the Torah, the erech is based on gender and age, where there's a fixed Torah value that corresponds to an individual based on his gender and age. What is the law with regard to someone who doesn't pledge his Torah value but his market value? Let us say he wants to pledge his heart's market value. Well, if a person can't live without a heart, so In dedicating the market value of his heart, he's really dedicating his entire market value. How much would this person, if he were sold as a slave, how much would he be worth? So the concept of Nidon Bechvodo is that idea of judging a person's value based on his dedicating a vital organ. Ma, we continue in the Gemara, Ma Erechen Nidon Bechvodo, just like by Erechen, where the Pasuk speaks in those terms. Rashi quotes the Pasuk. It says, Erkecha Nefoshos. Nefoshos is one's life. So one's dedicating the Erech of his Nefesh, a vital organ. And that results in his paying his full value. Af Hegdish Nidon Befodos. So too when he makes a pledge of his market value to the Beis HaMikdash, and he says it in terms of his heart's market value, he's really saying his entire value. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking, a double underline, that's featured on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note, where a double underline appears in the margin, Hatsois Shidahu. We're going to encounter now suggestions that will be rejected. So the Gemara asks, V'yisadru b'balchov kavachomer me'erichin. Up till now, we got the impression from the Gemara that the ruling was that when it comes to balchov, there's no misadrin. Here we're asking, let there be misadrin by balchov, by debt payment, and let us reach that conclusion through kavachomer logic, using erichin as your starting point. And here it is. Here's the logic. Uma erechen she'ein machzirin misadrin. In the case of someone who dedicates his Torah value, where the temple treasurer, when he comes to collect payment, he doesn't give it back as we do with collateral and a borrower. And yet, misadrin, so that if a temple treasurer were to come to collect, let us say, a collateral from someone who made his erech dedication, the Beis HaMikdash wouldn't return it, the pajamas, every night as we described earlier. And yet, when it comes to the final collection, the Beis HaMikdash will leave by the one who pledged his erech basic life-sustaining items. Balchov shemachzirin, in the case of Balchov, where there's even greater accommodation, where we practice machzirin, return of items, eino din shemisadrin, all the more so, we should accommodate the borrower and leave with him his bed and his pillow, as we've described earlier. So why don't we say that? Amakra, the Pasuk says, V'im moch hu me'erkecha. The word hu is a limitation. Him, he alone. Hu v'lo ba'al chov. Namely, the concept of misogyny is limited to the case of erichin and not to the case of loan payments. V'idach. Here the word v'idach and the other opinion. What is meant by the other opinion? So, the Meforshim suggest there are opinions that say we are misadrin by a Baal Chov. We didn't see that other opinion in the last in this discussion since the opening of our shiur, but Tosfos makes reference to the Rashi's pshat of the Rabbonin in the Mishnah. And according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the Idach is a reference to those that asked the question in the first place. Another possibility is there's a Brisa that we learned earlier that indicates we're Misadrin. So there's another school of thought that exists claiming that there is Misadrin by Baal Chov. What about the pasuk that we just cited, where it says "Vim moch hu me'erkecha"? So, hi, that pasuk is not coming to exclude others from misadrin, but rather atshe b'makuso. Makuso means impoverishment. Mitchiloso v'ad soifoi. Rashi, we look at under the Gemara text, the second line under the Gemara, Hai hu dechtiv berkecha dorish lei, is explained as follows. At shei b'makuso mitchiloso v'yatsofo shimherich atzmo oni. If a person dedicated his erech while he was a poor man, v'he'eshir kodem sherich kayin, and he became wealthy before the Kohen established how much he is to give, Eino nidon ba'asogas yad, he is not judged payment-wise based on his original inability to pay full amount. Elo nosin erech ashir, he will pay the erech as a wealthy man would pay, namely the full amount. So that the word who tells us this idea of accommodating the poor man in how much he will pay is only if he's poor from the very beginning, from his initial pledge, until after the Kohen arrives on the scene establishing how much he owes. We turn back to the Gemara with another suggestion that will be rejected. V'yachziru behegdish kavachomer mibalchov. Let there be a practice with regard to Hektish, who comes to collect payment, and they would, let us say, take some collateral, and during that interim period that the Beis HaMikdash is holding on to collateral, they would return the item to the pledger, like we return collateral taken by the lender, and it's returned on a daily basis to the borrower. And so why do we not do that by Hektish? Above, by the way, we have an arrow here. You can align it with the arrow above. There, the Gemara said, in no uncertain terms, Hegdish she'ein machzirin. So here, we're asking on that point, let there be machzirin by Hegdish. Kavachomer mi balchov. Uma balchov she'ein misadrin machzirin. Mind you, balchov, where we ruled that we don't practice misadrin, and yet we do return the collateral during the interim period before the court actually sells it off 30 days later. So we see by Balchov, which has this restrictive aspect to it, where there's not misadrin, we don't leave life-sustaining items at the end of the day, at the end of the picture, so to speak, yet during the interim period we are machzir. Hektish and misadrin, hektish, where we go even further in accommodating the pledger, where we are misadrin, eino din shemachzirin, all the more so we should practice machzirin. The Gemara responds, answer number one, Omar kro v'shochav v'samoso ivei rachecha. This pasuk is in the context of a borrower who is poor, and hence his garment, whether it's a daytime garment returned to him the day or the nighttime garment returned to him during the night for his use, he will, here it's referring to the, say, the nighttime garment, he goes to sleep with his garment and he will bless you. So the concept of machzirin is tied into this idea of blessing the one who returns it. Yotza Hegdish, this pasuk excludes Hegdish, she'ein tzorech brocha. The Beis HaMikdash, which maybe you'll say in a manner of speaking philosophically represents God's presence in this world, he doesn't need a brocha. So lo, is that so? Is that an accurate statement to describe the Almighty as someone that doesn't expect to be blessed? V'hoksib, the pasuk in the Torah says, V'yochalta, v'savata, uve'rachta es Hashem elokecha. The pasuk that we know is the basis for the Birkas HaMazon says that after you eat and are satisfied, you will bless the Almighty God. So the concept of bracha is not strange with regard to the realm of Hekdish. So where does the Gemara see fit to reject the notion that there should be machzirin by Hekdish? Elo Omar Kro, Ulecha Tiyeh Tzedakah. This pasuk again is coming from the realm of a lender that returns the collateral for the use of the borrower, and upon doing so, you are considered having fulfilled charity. Mishit Tzorech Tzedakah. So the concept or the practice of machzirin is related to a realm where someone needs the charity. A person from the general public, especially a poor man, needs charity. Yotze Hegdish, Ein Tzorech Tzedakah, to the exclusion of the realm of Hegdish that does not need tzedakah. Certainly, if Hegdish is taken in the form of a representation of God's presence in this world, so God doesn't need tzedakah. And it's my opinion that even if it's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash per se, there's a concept that we've seen elsewhere, Ein anius b'mokam ashirus, with regard to the way the Torah and the general public deal with the Beis HaMikdash, it is one of opulence, where we insist and ensure that the Beis HaMikdash always reflects wealth and royalty, not a place of impoverishment. So that even from that standpoint, Ulecha Tiyeh Tzedakah will exclude the realm of Hekdish from Misadrin. Ashkechei Rabo Bar Avuha Leliyohu, Rabo Met Eliyohu, Eliyohu Hanovi, or in this case he's an angel, Dekoi Beveis HaKvoros Shel Oivdei Kechovim, who was standing in the midst of a idol worshipper's cemetery. A crown shape appears, and on the side under the structural nut, under the mivneh, where the crown is featured, we have written, Shtei She'elois She'rabo Shoal Es Eliyahu HaNavi She'pokshoi Beis HaKvoros Shel Akum. Two questions that Rabba poses to Eliyahu, whom he found standing in a cemetery of idol worshippers. So the first question, Mahu Shiyasadru B'Baal Chov. Obviously, you can see the connection between this story and our sugya. Do we practice misadrin, leaving by the borrower when we collect the debt that he owes? Do we leave by him basic life-sustaining items? Omar Lei, Elio responds, Gomar Micha Micha Me Erechen. We saw this referred to the third line from the top of our Gemara, and Eliyahu takes a stand on that and says, we have that Gezeirah Shavah. Gabi Erechin Ksiv, and by Erechin, of course, it goes without saying that we're Mesader. By Erechin, it says, V'im mochu me'erkecha, Gabi Balchov Ksiv, V'chi yomuch ochicha. Just like we're Mesader by Erechin, so too we are Mesader by Balchov, by virtue of the Gezeirah Shavah. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Minayin le'erum shelo yitrom. From where do we know that an unclothed individual shall not tithe the truma tithe? If we want to strive for real accuracy, the question isn't the physical separation of the tithe from the rest of the produce, but the question is focused on the fact that a bracha, a blessing is made when one is tithing. So, is it possible then, can we allow tithing, which entails the recitation of a bracha while the person is unclothed? So, I misrepresented this. Not is it possible, but from where do we know that it is forbidden to tithe when unclothed? Minayin la'orum shelo yitrum. From where do we know that a person who's unclothed shall not do the tithing? And as I said, the tithing involves the recitation of a bracha. Answer, dechtiv, the posuk says, v'lo yireh b'cho ervas dovar. There shall not appear amongst you the exhibition of that which is called erva. Erva is a reference to those parts of the body that are always covered. So it shall not be visible, shall not be exposed. And with that we understand that if it is exposed, so then the matters of sanctity, of holiness, shall not take place. Omar Le, Rabba asks Elio, Lav Kohen Humor, are you not a Kohen? And Tosfos explains that there is a tradition that Elio HaNavi is is Pinchas, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen. And if that be the case, so he is a Kohen. And as a Kohen, he cannot be in the in contact with the dead. I should point out, I mentioned Tosfos discusses the issue of his being a Kohen in a different context, but the association of Elio with Pinchas you can see in the Rashi, four lines from the top. So, are you not a Kohen? My time a Kohen more bevesak forus. So why are you standing in a cemetery? Cemetery is a place of defilement of the dead. Omar Lay, so Elio answers Rabba, Lo Mosnimor Taros. Apparently you have not learned the sixth order of the Talmud, which is called Taros, and you haven't learned the Brisos in Taros. Desanyo, here we have a Brisa, Tanaic source from Taros. It says, Reb Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Kivreim Shaloivdei Koychavim Ein Metamin, the graves of idol worshippers, when overshadowing them, do not communicate defilement. Shenemar Vaten Soni Tson Marisi Odom Atem. That's a pasuk, and the pasuk refers to the Jewish people as the flock of the Almighty. Atem Kruim Odom. In this pasuk, we saw the last two words of the line just before, Odom Atem. You, the Jewish people, are called Odom, and Rashi adds that the idea of Odom is found in the context of Tumas Oihel, where the pasuk says in Bamidbar, Odom ki yomus ba'oihel. So you have the word Odom with Misa and Ohel, overshadowing. So the concept of overshadowing and and defilement is applicable to the Jewish dead. V'ein oivdei kechavim kruim Adam. heathen idol worshippers, when dead, are not referred to by the term Adam as associated with defilement through overshadowing them. So this was Eliyahu's response to Rabbah, saying, from the fact that you're asking this question, how can I as a Kohen be in a cemetery, you apparently haven't learned the Brises of Taras. Amar Lei, Rabbah says, Ba'ar Ba'al lo matzino b'shisa matzino. We barely manage with four of the six orders of the Talmud, and you're expecting me to be in be expert in all six orders? The four orders that Rabbah says I can barely manage are those parts of the Shas, the Talmud that we refer to by Moed, section dealing with holidays, Noshim, laws dealing with laws of marriage, man-woman relations, Nezikin, sometimes called Yeshuos, tort laws, Kochim are the laws concerning the Beis HaMikdash and sacrifices, and even though they're not actually practiced in the time of Rabbah, this is after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, nevertheless, we know that studying the laws of sacrifices gives us credit as if we're offering the sacrifices during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So Kochim has, we'll say, relevance in a practical form even without the Beis HaMikdash. But the other two, Zeroyim, which deal with laws of agriculture and tithing, which are applicable only in the land of Israel, not where I am, says Rabbah Bar Avuh in Bovel, and the laws of Taros, of maintenance of purity, which have relevance primarily in the Beis HaMikdash, I don't have expertise in that. I can barely manage four where the realm is, where they deal with applicable realms of halacha, and you expect me to be expert in six? Omar Levi Amai Eliyahu says, so what's the problem? Why not? Why are you not expert in all the realms? Omar Levi, so Rabbah responds, Dechikali Milsa, it's a result of financial difficulties, financial pressures. Because I have to, I have my mind on making ends meet, I'm thereby limited in my abilities to concentrate on all six areas. I want to point out that the Tosfos says at the bottom that when he says I'm not expert in all six, we're not referring to Mishnayos. The Amoraim were expert in all six orders of the Mishnah. But there was additional literature known as Brisos that Rabbah is saying, I lack expertise in the Brisos of the first and sixth orders of the Shas. So upon hearing Rabbah's response, Eliyahu now continues, Dabre va'ile legan Eden. Dabre means Eliyahu led him, Rabbah, and brought him, Rabbah, into Gan Eden, into paradise. Amalei, and Eliyahu said, Pshot klimach, extend your garment, spread out your garment, Safi, collect, Shkol, mehani tirpi, and take from these leaves. The leaves of the Garden of Eden. Safa Shokal. So he did that. And we'll see very shortly that these leaves, and I add that even though they're merely the leaves, that's the residual aspect of Gan Eden, yet they represent great wealth. So he followed Eliyahu's advice, spread out his cloak, and gathered these leaves. He have a nufik on his way out, on his way back to this world. Shoma, he, Rabbah, heard the Ka'omar, a voice saying, Man ka'ochil le'almei ke'rabo baravua. One who is consuming his world to come like Rabbah baravua. So he was overcome with fright, hearing that by his taking the leaves, That's going to cost him his eventual portion in that world of paradise. So taking it now is going to cost him the future eternal good. Nafat Shadinu, he spread out his, he shook out his garment, casting away all of those leaves. Afilu Hachi, even with his abandoning the leaves, Asye Leglime, he came back with his garment, leaveless, and yet the Sochad Glimo Recha, that garment absorbed the fragrance of those leaves, and that fragrance elevated the price, the value of that garment many fold. And Zavnei Betresa Afi Dinri, he was able to sell that garment with the fragrance of those leaves from paradise for 12,000 dinarim, a denomination of currency, a lot of money. And with all that money, Palginu Lechas Nevosei, he then distributed the money amongst his sons-in-law. Tanu Rabbanan. Before we go further, we have a topic heading on the side in the margin. Fiuv Hachzora Samashkon Leloive Oni, the obligation of returning the collateral to a poor man that owes money, that had taken a loan. The pasuk says, "V'im ish oni hu," if the borrower is poor, "lo shishka bavoto," do not sleep with the collateral, meaning the collateral that you took from him, let us say, were pajamas. Don't you, the lender, stay with them, keep them overnight. Give it back. Ashir Shachiv. The inference, though, is that if he were a man of means, then you could dwell and sleep with his avot, his mashkon, his collateral. My Ka'omar. What is being taught here? Because if we keep things on the translation level, what are we saying then? We're saying that the lender, if he had loaned money to a man of means, you can take his item and you're going to get your loan paid back at some point, and as well, you can use it, his mashkon as well. Well, doesn't that represent a problem of ribbis, of interest? Namely, and besides getting back the principal, you're also going to benefit from the use of the mashkon. So what is going on here? My komar, what's this talking about? Omar of Sheshes, hachi komar. So if Sheshes clarifies, it means thusly, v'im ish onihu lo sishkav vavoto etzlecha. If the borrower is a poor man, you, the lender, don't go to sleep while his avot is in your possession. Not that you're going to be using it, but it shouldn't be even in your possession. Ha'ashir shachiv, if the borrower is a man of means, you can sleep, you can go to sleep, vavoto etzlecha, the mashkon is in your possession, but you're not using it. That would have been, if you had been using it, that would have represented interest. Tonu Rabbonan, Hamalva es chavero eino rashoi lemashkenoi. We're going to first read the source with some literal translation. Following this two-line source, you can see the Gemara says, my komar, what is this talking about? So in reading it, you realize things will not be clear. So it says, one who is malvis chaver, one who loans money to his friend, eino rashoi lemashkano, is not allowed to enter his house and seize an item for collateral. Veino chayov lahachzir lo, and he is not obligated to return it to him. The oiver b'chol hashemos halalu, and he will be in violation of all of these shemos, these psukim, these commands. My ka'omar, what is this talking about? If you're telling me that the lender is not obligated to return the collateral, so where is there an element of sin that you're saying he's in violation of all of these shemos, all of these psukim? So we have a source that needs clarification. The diamond that you see is explained on the side under the Mivneh, the structural note. These are shtei gishois, two approaches, l'tikun lashon b'risa, to repair, to upgrade the text of the b'risa that we just read. So Omar Rav Sheshes, hachi ka'omar, thusly, the source means to say, Hamalve es chavero eno rashoi l'mashko, a lender of money to one's friend is not entitled to l'mashkino, to enter his house and take collateral. And if he did enter his house and take the collateral, he has to give it back. The violation of all of the relevant psukim will be violated if he doesn't return it, like the seifa, like the second part of the source said. The Reisha said he's not allowed to go into his house. Well, that's great. If he doesn't go into his house, he hasn't done anything wrong. But if he does go into his house and to extract collateral, he has to return it. And if he doesn't return it, he's in violation of the relevant verses. So Rav Sheshes' approach is to connect the violation of the five of all of these shemos of the verses to the second part of the source. Rovo Omar Hochi Komar Hamalves Chavero Eino Rashoi Lamashkino Ve'im Mishkino Chayov Lahavzilo. If he did enter his house to take a mashkon, he must return it. V'amed v'amumurim Shemishkinoi Shaloi Bishas Havaoso. This is a reference to the taking of a mashkon that is not at the time of the loan being given. Shelo b'shas havoso is a situation where we see that the borrower is not paying up the loan. The lender approaches the court for the court's intervention. And at that point, the court rules that the malva is entitled to an alternative form of payment, a utensil, an article of the borrowers. That is what we call shelo b'shas havaso. And Rashi on that says b'beisdin. So that when you're talking about a mashkon shelo b'shas havaso, we said the above, that you're not allowed to, the malvet, the lender is not allowed to go into the house of the borrower for that purpose. Avol, mishkenoi b'shas halvoso. However, a mashkon that is given to the malvet at the initial time of loan being extended, in other words, as the loan was being given to the lender, to the borrower, the borrower gave the lender collateral. Eino chayav lahafzir lo. There is no obligation to return that. That kind of mashkon is not what the Torah was discussing when it spoke of the need to return mashkons to the borrower. V'over b'chol hashemos halalu areisha. The source that made reference to is being in violation of verses in the Torah, that's a reference to the mashkon that was shelo b'shas halva, and the lender doesn't return the mashkon during the time of day that the borrower needs it. So that the violation referred to in the source is a throwback to the beginning of the source, that kind of mashkon that was taken shelo b'shas halva. Toni Rav Shizvi Kamei de Rova. Ad boy Hashemesh Teshivenu Lo. Zuk Suslai Lo. The Pasuk says Ad bo Hashemesh implies that in the morning hours, in the daytime hours, make sure that the mashkon is returned to the borrower, and it shall be in his hands until bo hashemesh, until the setting of the sun. And the source says that this pasuk, namely, that ensures the item is returned during the day, that's pajamas, night clothing. The pasuk says, "Hashev toshiv lo esa avoit kivo hashemesh." That means return to him the avot, the mashkon. Kivo hashemesh means at night. Zu ksus yom. That's a reference to daytime garments. So to review the source, the first pasuk cited from Shmos Perichov Beis, Ad Bo HaShemesh, until the sun sets. That means during the daytime hours, until the sun eventually sets, during those daytime hours, make sure the collateral is by the borrower. And the source says, well, that daytime hours, make sure it's by him, by the borrower, that's the pajamas. Then the second pasuk cited says, give back to him the avot upon sunset. It means for the nighttime. Give it back to him. That's his business suit, his daytime clothing. Now, this doesn't make sense. If our interest is to accommodate the borrower by returning the appropriate type of garment for the appropriate type of time, Omar Lei, Rava, in whose presence Rav Shizvi cited this source, Rava asks, Diyamama, a reference to the Seifa, to the end of this source, Diyamama means the daytime clothing, that says Zuk Sus Yom, the daytime clothing, Balenya, during the night, which what the Pusik was talking about, return, upon sunset, return it to him. That means for the period after sunset, the nighttime, make sure he has it, the daytime clothing. What does he need daytime clothing at night for? And in the Reisha, Udalaila, the nighttime clothing, the Ksus Laila, Biyamama Lomali, what does he need pajamas for? What does the borrower need his pajamas for by day? So this source is, something is wrong with this source. Amar Lei Ismay, so Rav Shizvi, upon hearing Rava's critique, says, should I delete it? Amar Lei Lo, don't delete the source. Hachi Ka'amar, rather understand the source thusly. Ad Bo HaShemesh Teshivenu Lo. That means, Ad Bo HaShemesh, means during the daytime, Teshivenu Lo, return it to him, and at night, take it. Zuk Sus Yom. At night, take it. Yeah, take the daytime garment. The shenit lalachbo balayla. The daytime garment is available for your taking as collateral during the night. And hoshev tashiv lo es ha'avay kevay hashemesh. Return to him the collateral upon sunset, meaning give it back to the borrower for the night. Zuk sus laila, that's a reference to the night clothing, shenit no lachbol biyom. The nighttime clothing are available for your taking, namely for the lender's taking during the daytime. So with that upgrading of understanding of the source, we can keep the original, we'll say, skeletal form of the source in place, just adding this understanding of it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishkanoi Umeis, a lender had received a mashkon from the borrower, and then after the lender returned the item for the borrower's use, the borrower died. So the mashkon that the lender had as a source of security has in the interim been returned for the daily use of the borrower. And during that time period of the day that the mashkon was in the possession of the borrower died. what rights now does the lender have vis-a-vis that mashkon? So the Gemara says he can take it shamta me'agabi bonav. He can take it from the heirs. Now, generally speaking, there is a rule that the portables of a borrower are not subject to collection by a lender. That does not apply over here. Why not? Because once the lender took the item as collateral, it's said to be his. It's said to be owned, in a manner of speaking, by the lender. So it's not a function of the lender collecting from the heirs, portables, but it is an item that is associated with the lender. And just technically, he was giving it to the borrower for use during the requisite periods. Mesve, we raise a question. Before we go further into the Gemara, we just should glance at the sign under our notes, our topic heading, which features what we've already said. Meis loive, the loive, the borrower, died achrei shekibel mashkono mehamalva, after he, the borrower, received the collateral from the lender. Lefi Rabbi Yochanan, hamalva yochol lekachtoi miyorshav. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the malva can take it back from the heirs. Now we have a source, and we immediately see a bracketed section. The language within the bracket section needs upgrading, so we initially could skip the bracketed section. Meisve, we read again the source summary of Imeir. Me'achar shemachzirin, once we have established that we return it to the borrower, the Gemara would continue at the top of Kuf Tes Vav, Omen Alef, Lomo, Chayzer Nu Memashkin. If we give it back, why do we then take it back from the borrower during the hours of day that it's not in use? In other words, why this kind of give and take arrangement? Let's go over the source again with the bracketed section. Omer Rabbi Meir, V'chi me'achar sheh memashkinin, Lomo machzirin. Once we establish that the lender is entitled to receive the collateral, why does he give it back? Lomo machzirin, you ask, why does he give it back to the borrower? Rachmona marahader, the Torah says, give it back to him. We've already learned about this extensively in our last couple of dapim, that during the daytime, the business suit that the lender took as collateral is given back to the borrower, and he gets credit as if he's fulfilled charity by doing that. So it's obvious why we're machzir. Ela me'achar shemachzir, and rather the issue is, once we understand that it's given back to the borrower, we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Tes Vav Omer Aleph. Loma chayzer u'memashkin. What's the purpose of taking it back from the borrower? After all, in a few hours, you're going to have to give it back to the borrower. So why the take it from him, give it back to him? So we answer. Number one, shalote shvius mishamotso. By having the mashkon in the possession of the lender on this ongoing staggered basis, the loan is not subject to cancellation characteristic of the Shemitah year. Namely, when the sabbatical year lapses, loans that had been outstanding till that point are canceled. That does not apply to a loan concerning which the lender had received collateral. In a manner of speaking, the loan concerning which the lender received collateral is a loan that's already been paid up, so that you're not said to be seeking payment, an initial payment of after the Shemitah year. So that's one element of purpose in the malve constantly taking the mashkon. And a second element V'lo yaseh metaflin etzel bonov. And it should not be viewed as the portables of a borrower that died. We touched on this just before. If a borrower of money dies and leaves portables in his possession, lenders are not entitled to take that from the heirs. But by the lender taking the mashkon, he is able to seize upon that after the death of the borrower. Now, the Gemara comments, Taima de hodaru mashkene. We're saying that this is the case because it was in the lender's hands when the borrower died. Ha lo hodar umashkene, if he didn't retake it at the point that the lova died, it would then seem that the malva, the lender, cannot take it from the heirs. Let's repeat the point. In the source we just read, on the top line, we dashed the line, Chozer Umashkin, why does the lender take it back? So we said 2 points. Let's focus on the second point. By the lenders taking it back, it doesn't become categorized as portables by the borrower's heirs. And if the lender wouldn't have taken it back, then it sounds from here, it would have been characterized as portables in the hands of the heirs. And if that's the case, the malve, the lender, would not be allowed to collect it. We said that metaltalin of yesoimim are not mishubid to the, I should say metaltalin of yorshim are not mishubid to pay off their father's loan. What did Rabbi Yochanan say in a case like that? Rabbi Yochanan said if the borrower died while the mashkon was in his possession, the malva can come and take it away from the heirs. So this source would be, the inference from this source would be a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Om Rav Ado bar Matana, so Rav Ado responds, V'lav terutzika metartzis lo. Did we not already have to doctor up the source? If you recall, when we started reading this source, there was a bracketed section. We saw that there was an inaccuracy in the source in its initial form. So that's terutzi komentatsis, means to reconstruct, to literally straighten out the source. Did we not already demonstrate that the source had an inaccuracy in it? Terutzachi, so respond, straighten out the source like this, leaving no question on Rabbi Yochanan, as follows. V'chimeachar she machzirin, if it's assumed that the lender will have to return the article taken as a mashkon to the borrower, lama memashkin meikora, why do you take it as a mashkon at the outset? In other words, you're taking something at the outset as collateral that you're going to have to give back. So the answer to that is why the malva takes it at the outset. By doing that, shalotei shivis meshamotso, by doing that, it will now become a type of loan that won't be canceled by the shmita year. V'lo yaseh metaltalin etzel bonov, and it won't be considered portables by the borrower's heirs. And that is in line with Rabbi Yochanan. Namely, once it's returned to the lovet, even if he happens to die, that mashkon does not become categorized as portables of his heirs, but rather it is the malve's item. Before we go further, we glance at the side in the margin where we have a topic heading. Ha'isur likones lebeisoi lekachas mashkon, the prohibition of entering his house to take the collateral, ne'emar rak beloive atzmoi. That's with regard to the borrower himself, not to enter his house. Avol likanes, number one, lebeis shel orev, to go into the house of, let's say, the loan guarantor. Number two, o lebeis shel mi shechayev chov acher sheino halva mutter, or the entrance to seize collateral, entrance to the house for the person seizing collateral of someone that's other than a borrower of money, that would appear to be mutter. That's allowed. If, let us say, someone owes you money because you rented to them a facility or an item. So he owes you money, not as a loan that you gave him, but he owes you money because he enjoyed the use of your item. And we call that rental. And if he hasn't paid, it would seem that there is no Torah restriction on the landlord entering the tenant's house to seize a source of payment. Tonu Rabbanan, loisovel el beso lavod avoto. The Torah says, "Thou shalt not enter his house for the purpose of taking collateral." Lebeso iata nichnas avolato nichnas lebeso shel orev. To his house, namely the house of the lovet, you cannot enter. But the house of the guarantor, his house, you could enter. V'chein hu omer, and it also says lokach bigdo ki orav zor v'chule v'omer bni im oravto l'reecho tokato l'zar kapecho. The psukim are describing someone who is an orev, someone who has become a guarantor for someone else's loans. So he has thereby become bound. Nokashta bimrei ficha, nokadata bimrei ficha. If a person caused pain to someone through speech, asezos efo bini v'notzel kibosa bekaf re'echo lech israpes urahav re'echo. And now the Brisa explains this a little further. Im momon yesh lo biyadcha, if someone is coming to collect money, he has money in your possession. Notice the line just before, the third word on the line above, says hisrapes. That's a contraction of the following. Hater lo pisas yad means open up your hand and with the money in it to give him. So if you owe someone money, pay him up. V'im lav, and if not, if you did not become a guarantor of someone's debts, where it's not a function of extending money to the one who's collecting, but rather you caused someone pain through words, through insulting someone. Hirbo alav re'im. That is what the pasuk said when it said two lines above, urahav re'echa. Litzad sheni, this is like dover acher, another approach. We opened up at the top of this Tanaic source, quoting from the Pasuk Losovel Beis Avodavoto, and we inferred, to the house of the Lova you cannot go in, but to the house of the Orev you can go in. Lebeisu yato nichnas, avol ato nichnas, we say in approach number two here, that you don't enter the house of the borrower to take a mashkon for as payment for a loan. However, lischar kosef, lischar chamor, lischar punduk, lischar duknois, that you can go in. If, let us say, someone owes you money because of kosef, because literally means shoulder, means you carried burdens for someone. You offered moving services. He owes you money. Or schar chamor, you rented to someone a donkey. You know, as you served someone's transportation needs by renting to him your donkey. Or schar punduk, you hosted someone in your inn. Schar diuknois, you carved something for someone in exchange for pay. So things like that, you can nichnas. For that, you're allowed to go into the house of these people that owe you money, because the debt is not a result of a loan, but is a result of either rental or services provided. Yochol afilu zokfan alav b'milveh. Would you be allowed to enter their house to take a mashkon, even if the debt that they owed you was converted into a loan? In other words, these people owed you money, and you agreed to treat that money owed as a debt. Can you go into their house at that point? Talmud lomar mashas meuma. The pasuk says that for any kind of loan owed, you cannot enter the house. So from here, we understand that if those debts were converted into a loan, then you would be restricted from entering their house to seize collateral. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.